Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's Highs and Lows in Wrestling here on the unofficial WWE podcast. Today is Saturday, April 17th, 2021. My name is Mimi Burris, and I have a Frito chip stuck in the back of my throat. So we're off to a great start. Let's get things going, guys.
Hardy with a powerful right hand knocking Sammy Guevara through the stage.
I want a divorce. Oh!
I told you, I was gonna ruin yours!
I feed a whole family with this title!
All right, you guys, another eventful week in wrestling, a super eventful week in comparison, obviously. I think unless you've been living under a rock, you've heard about what's gone on in wrestling this week, and we're definitely gonna get into that. But full disclosure, I just wanna let you guys know I'm feeling under the weather today, so might be a little bit more mellow than normal. Who knows? Maybe I'll curse less for f**k's sake. and yeah, so just full disclosure on that. But I do want to say thank you for choosing the unofficial WWE podcast here, guys, for your listening experience. Thank you for choosing this podcast specifically. Means I get to keep doing this and talking about wrestling with you guys. And you all know at this point that I love nothing more than doing just that. So thank you again, and yeah, that's all really I have to say. The only other housekeeping thing I should get out of the way real quick here is on this Wednesday night coming up, Thursday morning, Wednesday night, we'll see how things go. I am going to have the Ashley Mann here on the AEW review show. So if you've heard her on Matt's shows, great co-host, super excited to be able to have her on the AEW Dynamite review show. And so, yeah, that'll be this Wednesday night. I assume it'll be dropping Thursday morning. And speaking of Thursday as well, I think I mentioned on that review show, but I will mention it here too. I'm getting a little focal eye surgery on Thursday, the 22nd coming up. So I will be out of action for, I don't know how long. We'll have to see. Hopefully it'll be a short amount of time, but I do want to throw it out there because I have a feeling that I will not be able to produce a highs and lows for next week, and hopefully just that one week, but we'll have to see, because I'm trying to be as you know, I try to watch every show and give you guys, you know, an opinion and a perspective based off being able to take in all the wrestling that I can for the week, and if I can't see, can't really watch a lot of wrestling, so I do want to quickly mention that. And yeah, hopefully all goes well and I'm back, you know, for next week's AEW Dynamite review show and or next week's highs and lows. So that is all that. Now we're just going to get into, of course, our typical highs and lows. If you're new here, if this is your first time listening to this show, we do exactly what like the podcast sounds like we do. And that's talk about one low for the week and one high for the week, the best of the week and the worst of the week. And I'm pretty sure you all have an idea of where I'm going for the low for the week. But this week, I feel like I'm spending so much time talking about the lows, and we probably will do that again anyways. But I do want to try to change things up, and every now and then here we start with the high for the week. So I want to do just that because, you know, we include Sunday here in this week, and as most of the world does. And so we're going to just jump right into it and get on over to WrestleMania, which is going to give us our high for the week. And that's none other than the main event, obviously, the triple threat match between Roman Reigns, Edge, and Daniel Bryan for the WWE Universal Championship. And yeah, guys, I mean, I'm pretty sure most of you watched this, so no spoiler alerts here that Roman Reigns came away with the win, and I think that was the right decision. So, like, already on the right track there. But each man, I want to make sure I give enough credit to each guy here in this match. They did such a wonderful job. In the beginning, right away, and start of the match, have Jey Uso get involved. That makes perfect sense. Why would Jey Uso wait to get involved until later in the match? You know, get it done, get it right out of the way, have him taken out of commission for the match, or so we thought, obviously. Thought that was just a small detail that was done really well. I thought these guys used weapons, you know, effectively, and not just doing it to do it. You know, we didn't see 50,000 kendo stick shots for no reason. The announce table, of course, someone always has to go through the announce table, but that spot was really cool. And I have to say, guys, my favorite part of this entire match was when we saw Roman Reigns standing on the steel steps, looking out into the crowd, finally, of real, breathing human beings, looking out into the crowd, and he's getting booed senselessly. And I loved it, because that's exactly what he deserves, and I say that in the best way possible. He has been an unbelievable heel. Hate the guy, really do, as a character. Seems awful. Just really portrays this character so well, and so he deserved every boo that he got, and I was so happy to hear that there weren't people cheering him just because of obviously how great he's been. He is that good of a heel that despite his work being awesome, he's still able to get booed. So I thought that was really awesome. And the hope spots for each of these men had me biting on every single one. There were times where I thought Daniel Bryan was going to win, Edge was going to win. That time where Daniel Bryan pulled out the referee, they really had me that Edge had it that time. And each time I thought the finish was coming up, you know, the next near fall was better than the last. And that is just a sign of a super exciting match. This match only went 22 minutes, if I'm correct about that. And that's awesome. You know, I think this idea of, you know, these classic matches needing to go like an hour long or 45 minutes long, or like, don't even get me started on the unsanctioned takeover match again. You don't need that much time to tell a great story. And really, if you can tell a story in 22 minutes rather than 45, I think it's way better. So, this was actually the longest match on the entire card, both nights. So WrestleMania flew by. So all in all, I think that really helped. And I also think it helped that night two was pretty sucky for the most part, besides getting to see Logan Paul take a stunner. Night two was not great. And the Tamina chance, that one, I felt, you know, it warmed my heart to hear that, whether it was real or fake, but I assume it was real. But there was definitely some pumped in audio here and there. I'm almost positive about that. But we're not getting into that. We're not talking about that. We're talking about the good stuff. The spear to Jey Uso. Was it Jey Uso or Roman Reigns? Now I'm having a brain fart. Off the steel steps, whoever it was. That looked awesome. I remember thinking, like, oh my God, like, you know, Edge is no spring chicken, as we all know, and the bumps that he was able to take in this match, although it wasn't like Shane McMahon bumps, it didn't mean it wasn't like, still, they were just done so well. Like I said, I thought everything was done effectively in this match, and that's why it only had to be 22 minutes, you know? I thought everything was done well, didn't feel rushed, didn't feel like it dragged on. It's like Goldilocks and the Three Bears, right? This one was perfect. Awesome match overall, really saved night two of WrestleMania. And like I said, the right decision with Roman Reigns. You know, I forgot for a little while until I watched SmackDown this week that he literally called his shot. He was going to stack one of them on the other and pin them both. And what was so awesome about that was the visual for me wasn't as effective, I think, as it was for a lot of people. But what was so awesome about that was WWE rarely gives us a definitive ending to a match. Any match, really. Realistically, I mean, again, look over on SmackDown. It's always a roll-up, a count-out, a disqualification, whatever. Or someone gets away with a cheap win or whatever. No, like, Roman Reigns, you know, despite whatever happened with Jey Uso and whatever else, Roman Reigns pinned both Edge and Daniel Bryan. And I think and hope, due to their absence, both of their absences on SmackDown this week, I hope that means they're going into a feud for themselves. I'd love to see that. So, you know, if WWE can capitalize on its few good decisions, as this being one of them, going off and spinning off for another story between Edge and Daniel Bryan, I think is going to be awesome. I don't have a lot of hope that they're going to do that, but that would be the right way to go, in my opinion. So, all in all, guys, I thought this was awesome. There weren't 15 Superman punches. Jey Uso got involved just enough, you know, when you thought he was out for the whole time, then he comes back. Really thought we were getting Jimmy Uso, but I guess not. Hopefully he's still recovering well and is able to make it back. But yeah, overall, guys, you know, this match was fun to watch, well executed, well timed. Again, like I said, didn't feel rushed, didn't feel too slow. Really overall fun to watch. So totally, 110%, without a doubt, deserves my high for the week. Of course, there were a bunch of other things, you know, besides just WrestleMania, obviously, that were done really well this week and fun to watch. you know, AEW, I said the opening match between the Young Bucks and Death Triangle was a great match. Red Velvet, Jade Cargill, guys, I was hyped for that. Subjectively, that was probably my favorite match of the week, but I'm trying to be a little bit more objective on here and realize that, yeah, these three men in WrestleMania main event probably deserve the high of the week over two women in AEW on the second match of the night. But anyways, with all that being said, that's my high for the week. Again, guys, I would tell you all the other stuff I love this week, but I am, as you might be able to tell, just a little off today, just a little under the weather. So, all right, though, I'm sure I'll kick right back into gear as I start talking about this, because we are going to waste no more time to get into the low for the week, which you guys guessed it, Black Thursday. That's going to be my low for the week. And honestly, I think I actually started this podcast the week after Zelina Vega got released. And so when I started, I sent a sample show to Matt, and she was actually, her release was my low for the week. And I never got to send that show out to you guys, because that was just a sample show for him. But yeah, I actually would never want to go back and listen to that. But anyways, my point being is that, you know, I count the outside stuff that goes on. You know, I try to be, I try to discern what and what not to count as I'm talking about here on this podcast for like a quote unquote high and low for the week, you know, try to stay out of a lot of the wrestlers' personal lives and stuff like that. I don't get involved in, but when it has to do with their jobs and their careers and WWE as a company, as a whole, I think that is grounds for us to talk about here on this podcast. And if you don't think it is, well, who cares? It's my podcast. So anyways, that for sure was my low for the week, is this Black Thursday, and we're going to get into all of that right now. So for those of you who have not heard, like I said, there have been 10 WWE superstars released on Thursday this week. Those superstars are Samoa Joe, Mojo Rawley, Mickie James, Chelsea Green, Tucker, Wesley Blake, Billy Kay, Peyton Royce, Kalisto, and Bo Dallas. And yeah, all wrestlers have the 90-day non-compete clause with WWE, and they're not free to sign with anybody else, so we gotta wait until July 14th, I think, is the date. And yeah, what the hell is this? We're gonna dive into the whole thing. I do want to mention that I'm not... If this had not happened, guys, we would be talking about that Monday Night Raw segment where apparently watching Nia Jax slip and fall is worth, or is, according to Byron Saxton, is better than actually getting a victory over the women's tag team champions. And that's why it's okay for Dana Brooke and Mandy Rose to run off during the middle of a match and apparently play their music even though they lost. But we're not talking about that, guys. We're talking about Black Thursday, some real life out of the sandbox stuff. I mean, there's a lot to get into, and we obviously aren't going to cover every aspect of all this, but there are a couple things I do want to talk about in regards to this. Obviously, I think it goes without saying why this is my low for the week. This company made record profits last year and are on their way to making new record profits this year. Got up like a $5 billion, Peacock deal. And, their excuse for releasing these talents was budget cuts. Yeah. Johnny Ace calling each one of these talents and saying that they got released because of budget cuts. Samoa Joe is someone who was already, you know, deemed down or demoted down to having an announcer's contract and getting paid what an announcer would rather than a wrestler, because they wouldn't let him wrestle. Wouldn't clear him, and again, medically cleared from what I understand, Samoa Joe is medically cleared, but WWE won't clear him, or something along those lines. It's all a little bit fuzzy, but he's gonna go wrestle somewhere else for sure in July, or after July 14th, and I'm hoping it's AEW, of course, because then I get to see him every week. But, yeah, some of the names on here, guys, you know, so despite all that crap, the bull crap, right, we are releasing you because of your... You know, we're budget cutting. What? Why? You're making plenty of money. But with that being said, I do understand that there are certain names on here that should be cut, right? That should be cut. I don't want to say it like that. That it is more reasonable that they are not going to work for the company anymore, i.e. Bo Dallas. Someone who we haven't seen on TV in like over a year, and who pitched a bunch of things, but clearly WWE does not see anything for him in the company and whatever. Talented guy, you know, if you guys remember way back when, the Believe thing and all that stuff. I still reference that so much. I'm just out of date, but still. Someone like that, I understand. I want to point out that Wesley Blake, right, one of the three Forgotten Sons, was released as well. And so was, and I totally forget his name right now, but the other one was released a while back in regards to COVID stuff. And they kept Jackson Ryker. They kept the racist and the bigot, but they released the two other guys who made it. So they kept the one guy that made it so the Forgotten Sons had to be forgotten, essentially. If you guys remember that whole tweet debacle. Ridiculous. Ridiculous stuff. Whatever. Mojo Rawley, again, another guy who were kind of like, when's the last time he was really going to be on TV? He was supposed to have some weird push with Gronk because they were friends or something. I don't know. Again, he's probably better off somewhere else. They clearly didn't have anything for him. And again, you never want to see anybody lose their job. I want to make that clear. And it's hard to rank these releases from like worst to best or what. I don't mean to do that, but I do want to make sure we're mentioning everybody, but particularly there's a couple names I want to get into here because these are the ones that are the most outrageous to me. This is all outrageous. To release any wrestler or any employee during a pandemic when you have the money to pay them and then some and then a lot and then billions over that, actually, to release a wrestler during a pandemic or to release any employee during a pandemic when you have the means to keep them on and still make crap tons of money shows that this company is filled with cynical, greed, hungry, not cursing, jerks. Let's go with jerks. Fuck it. Assholes. I mean, so that's my point. None of this is okay. So, but when we get into names like Samoa Joe, clearly, this company is incapable of seeing that this man is actually one of the best wrestlers on the fucking planet. Unbelievable. Samoa Joe is incredible. If you remember his promos, he had some uncomfortable promos with Jeff Hardy. That whole feud was weird, but still, he caught him well. And his whole thing with Brock Lesnar, again, give that guy a microphone. He's unbelievable. So this company is missing out, and they will see, similar to Dean Ambrose, Jon Moxley, right? I guarantee we will have a similar thing with Samoa Joe. And you know what? Probably not even as similar because I don't think everybody knew what Dean Ambrose, Jon Moxley could do. As much as we know what Samoa Joe is capable of, we know Samoa Joe is one of the most talented wrestlers on the planet. So, ridiculous. Unbelievably stupid. And if it's has anything to do with his concussions or injuries and stuff, by the way, which he got on set to a WWE commercial, just throwing that out there, but if it has anything to do with that, that's even more screwed up. You don't release someone because they get injured. It's not their fault they get injured. In fact, it's probably something to do with your fault if it's on your set. But we could talk about Samoa Joe for like hours. But again, want to get into some other names. We have Mickie James. I don't know if I told this story ever, but I actually met Mickie James years ago when I was like probably 10, 12 years old, backstage at a Raw. Again, I don't know when, a long time ago. And sweetest thing in the world. She was so nice. And when I say that, Mickie James was one of the few gems in a Divas division and even pre-Divas division when it was the women's division, but they were treating the women like, you know, sex objects rather than wrestlers. Mickie James is not one of the four horsewomen. No, we can make that clear. Mickie James has an unbelievable amount of experience. So at the very least, if you're not putting her on TV, why don't you put her in the back and have her train some of the women? You lost Serena Deeb. You know what I mean? Why don't you have Mickie James work with some of the women? I think that would be a great position for her. And if anybody watched the NXT kickoff show, the TakeOver kickoff show, I thought she was great. Get an experienced woman on the panel, a woman on the panel like you have like a Beth Phoenix. I think that would be great for Mickie James. So my point being is there were so many places, if you weren't going to put Mickie James on TV, to have her in. So that I don't understand. And I honestly could probably see Mickie James going back to Impact. I think that would be a good spot for her. I don't necessarily see her as a fit in AEW, but at the same time, I actually have to say, any of the women who got released here on this list, any of the four women, probably would fit perfectly in AEW because their women's roster could use the talent. So, and the name recognition of a Mickey James. Can you believe that? Then we got Chelsea Green. Again, same kind of thing I talked about with Samoa Joe. Chelsea Green is so talented, has so much potential, essentially got released because she got injured at the wrong time. Finn Balor's still employed. Seth Rollins is still employed. And I will leave it with that. I would love to see her in AEW. Poor Tucker. And I'm going to talk about this a little bit with the Iconics, but Tucker is a victim, and I use that word appropriately, a victim of bad booking, no long-term booking, hotshot booking, Vince McMahon's dislike for tag teams, and like for right now, cute, funny, fat guy. Heavy Machinery was great, and Tucker added a lot to it, in my opinion. And essentially, they give him no blow off to the whole thing, even after they break him up. Tucker did nothing wrong besides wrestle incredibly and be a great tag team wrestler with Otis. He just wasn't Vince McMahon's guy, which is all kinds of screwed up. Tucker did nothing wrong. In fact, not necessarily just didn't do anything wrong, but did a lot right. Literally, it is WWE's creative fault, and specifically Vince McMahon's fault, that Tucker is in the position he was in. And then they blame him for it and release him. Tell me how that makes any sense. But, you know, by his tweet, he seems happy. So, speaking of all that, though, we got Billy Kay and Peyton Royce. This one, ooh, this angered me. Can anybody else tell me anything that was enjoyable about the women's tag team turmoil match besides Billy Kay? Exactly. Again, Billy Kay, not a great wrestler, needs a lot of work. Guess what? You have Lana on your fucking roster. You can't tell me that we keep, you know, we're releasing Billy Kay or whatever because she's not great in the ring or needs more developmental or what. Lana is on your roster. Mandy Rose is on your roster. Don't even get me started. Billy Kay is actually entertaining. Inner bloody taining. To steal an Australian thing, I think that's Australian. Anyways, my point being is Billy Kay did exactly what this company has asked for their talent to do. When they don't give her anything, she came up with something, made the most out of it, and what was more entertaining on SmackDown than Billy Kay? I loved seeing her. I thought she did such an amazing job. So wherever the hell she ends up, she's going to kill it. I really hope she ends up in another wrestling company to show WWE that they were the stupidest people in the world to release her and Peyton Royce. Again, Peyton Royce, kind of the opposite side of the coin. A little bit less entertaining on the microphone, but way more potential, I think, in the ring. Put these two together. Huh, that's a great idea. Maybe make them a tag team. I don't know. And you have, like, a dream team, even if it's a manager-wrestler kind of thing, or like a Reba, Rebel, Britt Baker thing. I think that would be great. And WWE literally broke up the Iconics with no explanation, no storyline, no plan for either woman. They both tried to make the most of it, and then WWE says, ah, well, you suck. You know, gotta go. We screwed up your whole thing, and you didn't do anything about it, so you gotta go. Meanwhile, they did, by the way. Great. More so Billy Kay, but I just unbelievable. I can't even, my words won't even, don't even compute to how angry I am about that. And then Kalisto, one of the most talented wrestlers on the roster, and I mean that 110%. Again, a different style of wrestling, but they did the same exact thing with the Lucha House Party. They broke them up with no plan. And then when they have no plan, they just release them. This is the problem with the WWE system. You don't get to break up tag teams and then release the guys because you have no plan for them when they were doing fine in the tag team that they were in. You have four tag teams on SmackDown. I don't even know any tag teams on Raw off the top of my head. And the women's tag team division is a joke. And then you have four tag team titles across all brands. Explain that to me. And then the women's tag team titles apparently can go to all three brands. But oh, guess what? NXT has their own tag team titles, so never mind. What? And we talked about Bo Dallas. So I don't know, guys. I explained the real outrage to this is really, believe it or not, we're still in a pandemic, right? the indie circuit is not on fire yet, right? It is still struggling to get back on its feet. And you release these wrestlers, most of them, with no reason because they're actually really talented and entertaining. You just don't know how to book them. Or even when you don't know how to book them, call like Billy Kay, they still manage to be entertaining and awesome. So I'm just disgusted by this whole thing, guys, and I can't talk about it any longer because I, like, swear, watching WWE and watching SmackDown and whatever this week, like, it was hard. It was not easy just because I'm so disgusted with this company over and over again. You guys have heard, I think I've said on this show before, how annoyed and disgusted I am with the fact that they still give out the Warrior Award. I'll let you look up, if you don't know, why I'm so disgusted about that. The Warrior Award as itself, it should be renamed as Shad Gaspard Award, honestly. Someone who actually deserves to be celebrated. Ultimate Warrior is, I'm not even going to go down that road right now. But nevertheless, guys, I have a quick email from Aiden. Again, thank you. And we're going to respond to that, Aiden. And then I'll give you my random match recommendation of the week. And then that's all for this week, guys. Again, I'm sorry for probably a shorter show than usual. Like I said, just a little bit under the weather. But definitely wanted to make sure I popped on here, especially in a week like this. But all right. So Aiden says that, where'd your email go? I lost it already. Okay. Hey, Mimi, your show last week was awesome. Best show yet, in my opinion. I sure hope you review Mania Night 2 next week. Sorry, I can't get through the whole card again. But there, Night 2 stunk in comparison to Night 1. There's my review. What a start. So many F-bombs and all the other words. It was a rainbow of bad language, and I freaking loved it. You have kindly agreed. You're the word ranty. I have said you don't thrash the product, but I think you'd nearly agree you thrashed the women's tag team match to pieces on your show. So I'm 10 years older than you are and married a couple years. My wife's a lot younger than me at 24, and she sat through Mania Night 1. She avoids all wrestling normally. She literally said, "Why are those women in their underwear?" I told you guys my fiance said the same thing. She wasn't laughing. She mentioned a lot of ass, too. She's a real believer in women representing themselves as they wish to, but was pretty disgusted at what they were wearing. It's lucky she doesn't know how I follow Mandy Rose and on Instagram. I doubt you do, but you could cut her pants in half for Mania for some of her picks. So super quick question is as simple or as hard as who chose the girls' ring gear? Who chose their name as sexy muscle friends? Bianca is not on TikTok in her bra, for fuck's sake. Do you feel the ladies think their gimmick is to look sexy, and by virtue of that, they are demanding themselves as women, demeaning themselves as women? Again, guys, you see why I need eye surgery? Are demeaning themselves as women. I mean, a woman is sexy when she's confident and by being authentic to herself and her values. Am I talking shit, or is there anything to this? I mean, we have to be very careful how we talk and treat each other in 2021. I just hope they have full input into their characters. Hashtag women's rights. I love that part. P.S. Your podcast is legit on fire. Fast becoming my favorite podcast of the week, period. It's great. How more and more of your ease you are on the show and how it's longer. You own the podcast. Have an awesome week and a great Mania Night 1 review. And Slan, and yes, you pronounce your Irish correctly. I appreciate that, Aiden, because I am so Irish. I have no Irish, but I am very, very Irish heritage. So maybe that's why that's coming in. All right, but to get into what you guys said, if you could understand any of that, my reading, again, I'm struggling to be able to see. About the women and the ring gear, and your question being, do I feel the ladies think their gimmick is to look sexy, and by virtue, they're demeaning themselves as women? I think, to get into this whole topic as a whole, and we talked about this a bunch last week, guys, but I do believe the women have 100%, and the men, too, I think they have 100% say on their ring gear, or at least mostly. From what I understand, I think that's the one thing WWE actually lets them still have control over. And thank God for that, because we get Seth Rollins in his suits and, you know, all that other good stuff. The New Day, awesome gear. Jonathan Davenport, awesome stuff. But so, yeah, I do think they have control of their own gear. And so when we talk about this, and I'll try to make it short, because like I said, we did go all down this rabbit hole last week. I think women in general, right? I think this is not a hot take, guys, but women in general should be able to wear whatever the fuck they want, right? Just as men are, women should be able to wear whatever they want. And deservedly so, right? I choose to wear Adidas sweatpants a lot because I really like Adidas sweatpants. Nobody can tell me whether or not I can do that. Now, I've said before, if I'm going to a fancy job or a job interview or a nice restaurant, will I wear Adidas sweatpants? Probably not, because it's not the place to wear sweatpants. Makes sense. These women should be able to wear whatever they want and should be able to dance on TikTok and whatever they want to do. If you guys have seen the movie Fighting With My Family, I think I mentioned this last week too. They do such a great job at depicting this whole thing, but they do a very Disney Channel fairy tale ending with the whole thing. But still, it's nice to see the outright dynamic of the whole thing. But they should be able to do whatever the heck they want off screen and for the most part, what they want on screen too. To me, just like I said, the best comparison I can make to get this across is I don't wear sweatpants to a fancy restaurant. Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke shouldn't be wearing whatever that was. And they, again, this week on Raw, by the way, just throwing that out there, to a wrestling match. I am scared week and week in, guys. We are moving slowly and slowly more into the Divas era. Once again, Divas era part two. And I will give you the examples. I would say about half the women on the roster are not nearly good enough to be on TV in the ring. And again, that's understandable with the house show things and all that other stuff. But I want to say you put more time in developmental guys, then don't put them on the TV. You have Chelsea Green, who's great in the ring. Just released her. But they kept Lana. Just throwing that out there. And again, I'm not calling for anybody to lose their jobs. I just think that when women go out there dressed as they were, these two women in specific, and we'll try to stay on that, that it demeans the rest of the women's roster as well. So it's not just affecting their careers too, but it's affecting the rest of them. Because now, if I'm a first-time watcher and I'm just tuning into WrestleMania, like you said, Aiden, like your wife was, and I see that, am I taking what I'm watching seriously? Am I taking these women as legitimate fighters seriously? And how do I know that we don't take legitimate fighters seriously on WWE TV is how many times has Shayna Baszler been rolled up in the past however long? I can't even get into this anymore. So I think, yes, they should have full input on whatever they do, 110%. But I also think that you hire people who are serious about wrestling, not serious about modeling bikinis on the way down to the ring. I just think it takes away from the product. I'm not there to watch that, guys. There's a million other websites I can go to if I want to see something like that. I'm sure you all know them too. I don't need to see that on my WWE TV. Find me a legitimate women's wrestler who would dress like that. That's all I'm saying. And again, these women should be able to do whatever they want with their lives and their careers and whatever else. But when I say that, I guess I don't exactly mean that. They should be able to do whatever they want in their lives. But when it comes down to their career, guys, like, I remember, so I used to sell toilets for a living. Believe it or not, I used to work at a sales company and we'd sold fancy toilets and bathrooms and kitchen stuff. And I had to dress a certain way, and I have tattoos, and they used to make me cover up my tattoos too, and I had to dress a certain way at work. And I signed up for that when I signed up for that job, right? And so, you know, you start working there for a year or two, you see other people not really doing what, you know, maybe dressing down a little bit and casual Friday, whatever. And so here and there, right, I still dressed fairly nicely, but not as nice as I needed to be dressing as I was working there. And I got a verbal written warning. It was like a verbal warning, but written, whatever. Point being is I got written up for it because I should have been. Because what I was doing was wrong because I have a job to do and I wasn't dressing for my job. So again, that's the best analogy I can make. I'm too tired and too out of it tonight, guys, to tread lightly anymore on this topic. But I appreciate always Aiden the emails. Thank you. You guys, if you have any questions about anything, I will probably be I don't think I'll be here next week, but next the week after that, if we want to talk about anything, please always email me. It's mimi.realwwepodcast@gmail.com. Always love to get your guys' thoughts on the show, and always appreciate the emails. So thank you. For your random match recommendation this week, guys, real random. Let's just get into a really, really random match, but let's move on over to WrestleMania 30, The Shield versus Kane and the New Age Outlaws. Anybody else remember that this happened? Because I didn't. But yeah, guys, go check that out. Always good to see The Shield back in form. Three awesome guys, and look where they are in their careers now. Roman Reigns is on top as Universal Champion. Jon Moxley is killing it in AEW. And Seth Rollins has some pretty fucking awesome suits. So thanks again for listening, guys. I appreciate you guys sticking with me per usual. I hope you all have a wonderful rest of your week, and I will talk to you soon. Again, remember, Thursday morning, Ashley Mann, AEW review. It's going to be awesome. Be there. All right, I'll talk to you guys next time.